Hello, and welcome back to the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy day.
Happy days.
It's almost the end of the week. Excited.
It feels like it's going fast. I can't believe February is almost done at this point. Been going quick.
What do they say? The older you get, the faster life seems to go. Yeah. Like there's a some science behind that, apparently. Whereas as a kid, every day is long. Summer is the longest in the world. Vacations are awesome because they take forever. And then all of a sudden, it seems like things start to accelerate. And there's an actual, I don't know if you call it a theory or a proven scientific thing that there's a reason for that.
Yeah, I can tell you what that is. There's no science. It's you just like to sit. That's the difference. That's the only thing that separates you and a child. So you like go to the bank. That was the worst thing in the world. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, I'm just gonna not do anything.
I feel like as a kid, I was in learning mode all the time, and so time perceived to be slower because I was constantly experiencing new things. You go on a vacation, it's a new thing. You go on a flight, that's a new thing. Everything's new to you. You get older, stuff becomes less new. And it starts speeding up. And like, I've already done that. I've already done a flight before. Can I get there already? Like, maybe there's more expectation on the other side of things that.
Maybe it's because things aren't new anymore. Maybe
it's just not, fresh anymore. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway,
our main topic for today is we're going to jump into an episode that we've done in the past. We're kind of revisit our prior mailbag. Chris has responded back to our mailbag from an earlier episode that we responded to his question around, and he kind of gives us some flack for not going deep enough. So we're going to go in, we're going to go a little bit deeper on our question that we addressed kind of on episode 294 and go a little bit more in depth, I think, around insights and data analysis and what that means and what that looks like. Maybe focus in a little bit more of our comments around either how we get this done or what does this look like for organizations. But before we get into our main topic, let's do a little bit of news. Tommy, any kind of things that you're working on these days? What kind of openers should we talk about here?
I got two, and you could do choose your own adventure, but
let's do both.
All right. So the first one is, I think the biggest you if you've been using ChatGPT like we've told you to, and use OpenAI,
I saw this.
Yeah, and it definitely made a dent in my day. And we're all loving it. It's so cool. Look at all the prompts kind of thing. Well,
AI went off the rails. ChatGPT is like freaking out right now.
And it's because apparently there's a bug in one of their packages and, that could be a problem. Like, do you understand if I had a bug in my software before, like it's down and my software is down. Okay. Now the answer's coming out when we have this reliance.
It's using Spanglish. It's using Spanish and English together as it responds to your questions.
I've seen some hilarious output. I haven't had as bad as that, where it was just like repeating new lines and just like, it was like, oh, that's not good. Or to me, it was just like, it would say two things and then move on and go, so I'm like, what in the world is going on?
And then it starts to, I was reading a couple things on, so apparently Megan Longoria picked up on it and sent a little Twitter thread. That's how I heard about it. She's like, I think, ChatGPT has been drinking too much or something, you know, something along those lines. And it just started randomly saying the same word over and over and over again. And it was starting to throw in Spanglish, and it would have like a paragraph of what you wanted. And then it would just like have gibberish. And you're like, yes, these are words. Yes, you're writing them as if they are a sentence, but none of them make sense together. There's not a coherent thought in the context of the words. So it was very funny, some of the comments and the things that people were asking it, and it gave you some very weird answers.
Now, what's interesting to me is we tend to, even with animals, right? We humanize them. We put human.
True. Like,
if you're a supercomputer and all people are doing is asking you to do mundane tasks, which is what we are, like, hey, we want to save all this time. Like, we're going to ask you the same dumb question over and over and over. Maybe it's just losing its mind, right?
Maybe it's lost it.
Like, really? Like, can you imagine having the same conversation over and over and over and over and over?
Billions of times.
Right? Yes. And the prompts that we're so proud of are just different ways of asking for the same
thing.
Now, let me show you where your system information is and how do you get your Wi-Fi back working.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, especially with this ChatGPT stuff. So I'm going to go into ChatGPT a little bit more here, and potentially even Copilot, because I think this is a very interesting conversation. Tommy, I know you have purchased Copilot. Seth, do you have Copilot yet? Like the Microsoft 365 version?
I do.
Have you gone into Excel and used Copilot inside Excel?
I've not tried that yet.
Okay. The other day, I was doing some explorations around Copilot inside Power Query. So I'm using Copilot in Power Query. I'm trying a couple things. I'm getting a little frustrated because I don't really know what it can do. And then a recommendation came to me. It says, go see what the Excel team has done with Copilot. And I go into Copilot. I get into Excel and I click the Copilot button. It says, hey, we only operate on tables because we need to know a defined range of data. I'm like, okay, that's fair. Mm-hmm. It says, would you like me to add a sample of data? Okay. Boom, table appears, like six columns of stuff. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. It made a whole table for me. And then it prompts me with questions. It says, would you like me to add a formula to enhance the data or the analytics in your table? Yeah, sure, do it. Here's something we found interesting. And it puts another metric on the table. Okay. All right, now I'm getting – there's this point in time when you start using Copilot or ChatGPT of things. You're like, okay, I see what you did there. I'm going to challenge you now. Yeah. Okay, let's go. Yeah. Like you did something that I thought was maybe a bit impressive. Okay, let's see how far this game will go. It's like you're going to push the poke the bear
like
at this
someone
point.
Someone made a shot. Like, do it again. Do it again.
Yeah, do it again. Yeah, yeah. Do it again. Let me see. Come at me, bro. Come at me.
So now I'm going to bring in my own table. So instead of your table, you've already well, like.
I kept going further. I kept saying, okay, can you add data bars to the column called whatever the name of the column was, sales number. Boom. Let me do that for you. Here, I formatted the column for you with data bars. I was like, okay, all right. Then I started saying, okay, what if I could stack commands together? Like, what if I could do multiple things? And then I said, can you sort this column in descending order and highlight any value that's above 50,000? Boom, it did it. Two commands at once. And I was like, oh, snap, we're playing a game here. Like, you're showing up to play. So anyways, I was very impressed with what I could find and what I could do there. And I really enjoyed the concept of simple commands that I could just ask it to, you know, it's the mundane. It's to your point, Seth, you just said earlier, it's the mundane things that I don't want to figure out where those, but I know it can do it. Do I remember where all the buttons are and all the buried menus that are in the ribbon? Maybe not. If I'm spending a lot of time in there, yes, fine. Maybe I'm using a search thing. But ChatGPT should just be like, here it is, bing. And maybe the next time I actually go find the button. But I think people are going to rely on ChatGPT. Like if I can just say, make a bar chart on this column. And also, I'm in Excel. This is in the web, so Excel for the web. I'm able to like have my microphone. I could just talk to it. I'm like, make a bar on the column named blah, blah, blah. And it would do it. I was like, oh, this is amazing. So I can start talking to my computer and it actually starts figuring out what I actually want and does things.
This is
interesting.
This is valuable because as you're talking, so was this just in Excel Copilot or you were in Power Query in Excel Copilot?
Yes. No, so this was purely a Copilot in Excel experience. I wasn't in Power Query there, but.
Because like your description of things, like I just wrote down two ideas I gotta go try like that
I know
have been challenging for like
people.
Some analysis that people have been trying to do right now.
Yep.
And if things are that easy where I can just say, yeah, do this thing and that thing and like let me know what the output is.
And to be perfectly honestly clear here, like we're at the beginning stages of this. Yeah. I mean, this is how long has this been out for? I mean, I just bought it like a month ago. I haven't even had time to play with it. I don't even know what prompts I can use. Right. And so one of my main challenges here is, you know, my understanding is as Copilot is being used and interacted with these different products, it's learning what is working well for these situations. So for example, it doesn't hallucinate, but I mean, it probably does, but I didn't get it to do it. But I was able to like look at, like I was able to write statements against it, and it can do things that the programmers of Copilot didn't intend for it to do. I was talking with the Microsoft person, and they're like, yeah, we've seen some surprising results out of these things. I was like, really? So it has learned, like sometimes it learns how to, yeah. And sometimes it learns how to like do things that they didn't explicitly program it to do. And it's figuring out, okay, this is what users want. When they ask this, I'm going to do this to the whole action-based thing, the whole simplified, like the experience of being able to let people just communicate to the program and say, I want you to do this. And it is able to interpret that, find the menu option, click the column and do the things. Those simple based actions are huge. I think that would be really relevant.
And again, anyways, you had that with Copilot Studio.
Yes. Well, so there's now, so this is, they need a library. And so in Excel, there's a little like, you know, notebook at the bottom of the icon. I didn't have time to play with it, but apparently there's the ability for you to like go see all the different prompts that are supposed to be used and things you can go test and try. But I feel like I'm back in the early days of Google where I have to figure out how to Google everything again. I don't know how to write a question to Google to get the answers that I want. I'm still trying to figure out what kind of prompts can I use here to get this to work. And it just will take some time. It'll take some exposure. All this to say is I was very impressed with Excel. Little underwhelmed about Power Query. It feels like there needs to be some more work done there for what I've seen in Power Query. It doesn't quite do as many. So I was amazed at the Excel integration. I was not amazed by the Power Query integration yet. I'm still working through it.
Dovetail into the part of the conversation today.
All right. Well, then that was one of our openers.
What was the other thing you got?
Yeah, Tommy, let's go to your other opener. Do you have anything else?
I
mean,
I could like literally do this for the next hour. Speaking of also relying on all the different AI things, I've been working like since you're a person of one at a company, you kind of have to worry about your own upgrades to your computers. And,
oh, totally.
Yeah. So
you're getting a Mac now? You're getting a Mac.
I am now going to be a true designer. but like I have this custom PC with a bunch of slots. I'm like, I wonder what I could do with this. So I basically, and now Google has their new AI, which is kind of really cool, that just came out. And I was basically like feeding it some things like, here's what I'm trying to do. What kind of setup do I need? Kind of the infrastructure. I'm running AI servers here, but I'm also doing the database stuff, but I'm also doing a lot of training. So, and it's like, hey, what's your motherboard? It's like, okay, well, if you have those three hard drives, purchasing these together, here's like certain like SD drives that will make sense. Oh, here's all the ports that you need to do. And it gave me a diagram of my motherboard after like, you know,
wow.
So I was literally going like slot 7, right? And I was like, okay, this is cool. And then I asked it to compare the top 7 like hard drives for like what I needed, because I'm like, am I gonna do partitions or am I gonna do a skip drive, whatever the heck that is? And I basically said, like, basically telling me like, you figure out what I need, but you ask me those questions that you need to ask. And it was, I mean, this ability now just to rely on it. So like my computer is about to be so close, except I'm missing a screw because I dropped it into the computer. But apparently it's very important.
Yeah. I won't hurt anything.
But like all the stuff I was like, yeah, I could have Googled all this, which I tried Googling too, because again, when it said, here's all your comparisons that you had based on a ranking, none of these numbers are correct. They're all made up. And I was like, okay, thanks. Anyways. So
it's getting pretty impressive what they can go find. And again, it's when it can source the internet for information and scan different web pages and then say, okay, here's 30 web pages that tell you how to build PCs. Here you go. Boom. I'm going to look at all of them and give you a summary of kind of what's going on there. That's the kind of value. Like, it feels like these AIs are able to, like when I did Google would say, you search a question, I will return the one result that has the answer that you need. What I feel like is happening now is, you are asking Copilot questions or you're asking the AI questions and it's summarizing multiple pages of stuff and returning back, okay, looking at these 50 pages, here's what we think is the best options for what we're seeing consistently across these different areas, which is very interesting to me.
We're just touching the surface because everything we're doing right now is that simple prompt-based, chat-based, no memory kind of thing, no kind of guided part where like, kind of like the agent side where, hey, I... it set up a Jupyter hub for me on another computer, and I basically let it run my computer and did all the configuration. So like the longer memory side of things, rather than just that simple question answer, which that is right now Copilot for Microsoft, that's where we're touching the surface, Mike. And it's very scary to what else we can do.
So help me understand what you're doing with this. You are using your computer to host your own large language model, and you're asking it questions directly?
Yeah, and then there's a package called Open Interpreter, and I had a Raspberry Pi. I'm like, set up Jupyter Hub on the Raspberry Pi. All the configuration, whenever I log in and I connect to that IP, you should launch a spawner kind of thing, so I don't have to put anything on my computer.
Tommy, I knew you were a nerd. But this goes to another...
It perfectly!
We're at another... You just leveled up in my mind. Like, I would not have anticipated, like, Tommy going out and saying, okay, I'm going to get a large language model. I'm going to go figure out how to render it on something, and then I'm going to use it and get to it via... I mean, I knew you were technical, but Tommy, this is another level. Your IP address... You're building IP addresses and then submitting questions to a random IP address in your local network? This is crazy.
I gave it admin access. I said, run Jupyter Hub. Oh, here's geez. What I want. I got coffee. And I did it not on my computer, on the Raspberry Pi. And it was done. It's insane.
Yeah.
So that's Tommy, funny. Tommy, at this point, I would just like just a reminder.
Cut you know, costs.
You have a family upstairs. You, sometimes you need to pull yourself out of the dungeon. Go say hi.
I heard the same thing this morning.
Tommy has just recently installed. Tommy has recently installed a shower and a bathroom, and yeah, the kitchen right. is currently being installed downstairs in the basement. There will be no leaving for Tommy. The wife will continually. The door on the lock. The AI. Lock on the door upstairs has been switched.
Why,
it's now. It's now the other direction. So now Tommy is locked in the basement and is required to continue to make money while the family's upstairs.
Please create me a shower. I'll buy you a 3D printer while I'm working.
Hal, please build me a bathroom.
Yeah.
Why hasn't anyone made an AI that's called Hal? That's a miss.
I think we know. You know,
we probably have.
You it's know, probably the already there. You just don't know it.
Is Hal?
Yeah. Imagine you're. No. Yeah. I don't. I just because I just said it. Now it's in
movies
the internet.
Coming to life.
Yeah. Right. Interesting. All right, so one more announcement here real quick. I'll just throw out a last one and we'll get into our main topic today. So this March 25th through the 28th, the Microsoft Fabric Conference is coming out. You can go visit azuredataconf.com. And if you'd like $100 off your ticket, you can get $100 off by using the coupon Parlo100 to go get $100 off your ticket if you're going to the Las Vegas conference for Microsoft Fabric. Should be a great conference. Looking forward to it. We'll see how we... It doesn't feel like this is a dynamic conference taking over Fabric. It feels like this is an exclusive Fabric-based conference. So very much looking forward to that. So hope to see you there if you want to join us out in Las Vegas from March 25th, 26th to 28th. There's also some pre-cons and some post-cons as well if you want to learn more things about Fabric and how to use it. All right, with that, any other...
RBI blog is out.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's maybe we.
We've,
that's
we've been
we
talking
probably,
about the desktop, you know.
We've been talking about desktop updates, and now it actually came out. So give us a couple things, Seth. Maybe give us a couple high level Edelmans here of what you're finding in the blog.
I don't want to take too many things away. Like we talk about a little bit. Visual calculations is the biggest thing, for sure.
Not dive Tyndall? Into
that. For sure, dive into that.
Okay. All right.
I'm not saying that. The Tyndall thing isn't important.
Okay.
I'm just saying from a wider audience perspective.
That's probably true.
Visual calculations.
Yes.
And Tyndall is much more on the development side. So visual calculations.
I was very pleased to see there's a lot more detail around on-object interaction updates. Mm-hmm. I'll admit it's still a bear to work with, but I definitely use the on-object updates as well. Well, now they have changed it so that you can actually select two visuals and resize them. So properties that are common across visuals, such as width and height, you can now select two different kinds of visuals and have the size and style still show up. Amazing. That's just like, why wasn't this done? Like, why not grab all visuals and say, turn title off? Like, that should be a thing. Like, every visual has a title. Sure, let me turn it off. Another one here also is, when you don't add data to a visual, you could never adjust the position of it. So there are properties of the visual that appear only well, it traditionally was, the visual would be put on the page. This is what I've been whining about since day one. I've been complaining about this. You put the visual on the page, I need to be able to adjust the position, the length, the width, the height, the direction, like all that. That should be adjustable for me, even when there's no data attached to it. Don't restrict me. So they fixed that one. And there's a whole bunch of bug fixes. And what, the main one that I've really been having an issue with is when you work with certain visuals, the build pane would accidentally close or automatically close. So you would click on different objects on the report page, and some of those windows on the right-hand side would then accidentally close or shut down or minimize themselves when you were clicking on across different visuals. Maybe you're doing a cross filtering or cross highlighting, and all of a sudden, boom, all the panels on the right-hand side start closing. And it was very jarring to have the UI changing like that. So a lot of bug fixes is there. So I felt that that was a good, another good solid update. Anything else that stood out to you, Tommy?
I was going to say the PowerPoint thing, but I figured.
I knew you were going to say PowerPoint. I saw this. I thought that's Tommy's feature right there.
I don't know. No, I honestly, I think, yeah, the visual calculations are probably going to be the most significant. Obviously, Tyndall, and they talked about the, like, how they're actually migrating that anytime.
Let's go back to PowerPoint. Like, you said PowerPoint, but you didn't describe it. Like,
no, because I was just doing that to you. Because,
you don't really like the feature. You're just trying to get me riled up.
Yeah, I'll just get you riled up because.
Oh, okay.
No, the PowerPoint is, rather than adding the link, you can actually get a shareable link from PowerPoint. They're still working hard on the integration. So, no, this is a big, they came out with a bang for February.
Well, they had like a month, like they didn't release anything for January. So it's like, it's a lot of bug fixes and things in there. And so, one thing I will note about Tyndall, and I think there's a Twitter thread that's also talking about this as well. So my impression was Tyndall is this new format. If you're in desktop and you save your project down as Tyndall and you publish your project, your Tyndall project, you publish your Tyndall project through desktop back to the service, it translates it back into a TMSL, the model.bim file. So the desktop recompiles all the Tyndall files and pushes it out to the service. And the service will retain that TMSL, the JSON object for model.bim. However, Rui, I think, made some comments that says, if you grab and create your PBIP file and you publish that into the repo before you synchronize that back to the workspace, then the Tyndall format will be obeyed and retained when you work with the file. So it sounds like it's, if you publish through desktop with the PBIP format, it converts it back for now. But if you publish your report or if you save it and then save it into a repo and then link your repo directly to the workspace, then you have the Tyndall format that you can use. So I don't really know what the implication that means yet or how that will work, but it sounds like it feels to me like you're not going to be able to publish over an old data set. You'd have to delete it, save it as Tyndall, push it to a Git repo, and then synchronize that Git repo back with the workspace in order to get the Tyndall format to work. But I understand why they're doing that, because I mean, ultimately, if you're using Tyndall format anyways, desktop should be accessing your Power BI reports from the Git repo, and the service should be using the Git repo. So ultimately, you shouldn't be publishing from desktop anymore, basically. If you're using Git, you should just go directly to the repo and use that to edit or pull down your files and change things and check things in when you're done. So it does feel more like a proper development process. Anyways, interesting notes around that as I was discovering more about the new Tyndall format and how it works.
Sweet.
All right. With that, let's stop talking about fun new things. Let's go back to our actual topic of the day. Seth, you want to kind of give, there's a lot
let's
of
revisit all of our deficiencies.
Yeah, let's this is going to be, he's poking a little bit at us here. I think this is good. Right. I think it's good to kind of push back. The community is pushing back on what we said earlier.
Right. So that's good.
Let's go at it. How do you want to do this, Seth? Do you want to read out the statement again?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Otherwise, it's not a true mailbag.
All right. Let's read it out.
Hi, fellas. It's Chris, and we'll leave the last name off.
Sure.
Again. This question is a direct follow-up to episode 294, 294 being data analytics versus data visualization. I felt you guys were dancing around something really important, but not really getting there. Snap. Related to finding the aha insight in data. I think it's really hard to design a Power BI report or app that does that, which is why so many report consumers want to dump the data to Excel and then start working with it. When you gather requirements and build a report, it's all premised on what the recipients expect to find as insights. That's not data analysis. So someone in IT or Central BI as the data modeler, report builder, are not doing data analysis. You're building reporting around KPIs, OKRs that were designed based on assumptions that the business has about their area of the business. Expected results don't make you go, aha. It's finding unexpected things that is really the goal of data analysis. What's some correlation that we didn't think about before? What's some outcome that we didn't see coming? When we're in Power BI Desktop, we can play with the data, sift through it, and find anomalies where we might say, that's funny. What would that look like if I plotted it in a scatter chart? Or what would I see if I showed it by this dimension, by this other dimension? So that I can see what's really going on here. That's data analysis. So my question is, how do we enable that kind of experience for report users who not going to design their own ad hoc report in desktop? I suspect this might involve perspectives and visual personalization, plus robust training. The goal would be to allow consumer analysts to find the insight and then be able to visualize it in a way that they can then communicate out in an understandable way. So this isn't something to design for executives, of course, but for analysts in different areas of the business. I think this is the holy grail that's so hard to achieve. Thoughts? Question mark?
I'm going to say yes. Okay, let's move on.
Thank you for not having a character limit. So one, I love the fact that he ends everything with thoughts? Question mark? Because I do that all the time.
A little ode.
Actually, this is a question directly from Seth. Seth just...
yeah. I just labeled it as a random name.
Some random names. You just went to a random name generator and just pulled this in. No, this is actually a real person. This is not Seth.
So, by the way, there's a lot to unpack here. I think there's multiple levels that we can chat through and talk about, give our perspectives on things.
Many different levels in this one. There's lots of unpacking going on here.
All right. Let's break it down into the main category. Seth, what do you think are kind of like the main things you want to hit up? Because I think there's a ton of direction we can take this.
Well, I think ultimately we're going to talk about the, you know, right back at me.
Well, here, let me give you a moment to think, Seth. I think part of the topic here is the audience matters, right? So, I do think there's different kinds of reporting for different levels of the organization, and I think that was very clearly pointed out here. Like, you know, insights or analytics, how you want to describe that. If you're an executive member, the insights you're looking for are consistent numbers. And I think executive leadership is also looking for consistent insights. And there is a, let's call the insight something around a budget and then measuring myself to the budget, right? I have an expectation of where I'm going to get to. And then I'm going to have how close did we get to that expectation? So if you're at the higher end of the organization, you're trying to move resources around either into sales, into product development, into supply chain. Like, you're making higher level decisions where you're moving groups of people around to make sure that your end objective, which is likely making money or being profitable, right? Those end objectives are being delivered. So at that higher end level, I think your insights are very consistent and they're repeatable day to day. When you talk about the role of the analyst, and I agree a lot more with this, with Chris's comment here, the analyst is looking for those aha moments, right? So we know sales are down. That's that high level OKR, that main goal. Okay, sales are down. Analyst, go figure out what do you need to go find in the data that is describing what happened. Oh, the analyst found out we lost one of our largest accounts or second largest account, you know, they're no longer buying from us, that therefore we had to go make up sales somewhere else to increase our revenue for the year or for the quarter, whatever that may be, right? So I think to me, there's like different levels here. That analyst level is doing more of a self-discovery. I feel like there's, when I was going through kind of like creativity, some workshops to help be creative and things, there's this concept of like, you start with a very narrow scope and you widen out to a very large area. So you kind of start with the initial assumption is sales are down. Okay. Then we do exploratory things in the data. We widen our scope and say, let's explore our data and figure out where that's coming from. And then you kind of narrow your focus back down again. So it's just kind of like a narrow funnel goes to a wide funnel and then it narrows back down to an answer or something like that. So that's one pattern. But you could also think of your discovery things as like a funnel that has a wide end. So if you think about a funnel at the top that has a very large hole, there could be a million different questions you want to ask of your data, and you're going to try and use the report to narrow down to a specific area. You're going to kind of tell a story. Then there's the opposite effect. You're going to come in with a very specific answer and you just want to explore the data. You want to widen your scope of what you're looking at. So I think there's many different ways to portray this. And I think audience matters here. And that's kind of my initial thought.
Yeah. I mean, I just recapping where we were in the previous conversation, I'm trying to like pull it up in my head, right? We were describing the difference in the two. What is the difference between and data analytics and analysis versus data visualization? And the analytics part, finding the meaning, a lot of this is ad hoc. It's very exploratory in nature. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then it gets to a point where you're ready to refine the message a bit. So I don't want to like pick apart the parts, but like in the statement that stood out to me is when you get like Chris saying, when you gather requirements and build a report, it's all premised on what recipients expect to find as insights. And I don't think that's the case all the time, right? Like I think there are many different types of reporting. And when we start to talk about visualization in Power BI and building requirements around things, the requirements for how we display information is important. And in many cases, those reports, after having that solidity of or that requirement sets around what we're going to build, the value is in the data changing underneath all the time that direct or influence the different insights that are provided to the end user. It's not about it, and some of that is exploration, and some of it is understanding like what is happening in just a couple areas like planning, forecasting, finance even, right? Like these are the same visual. It could be the same visuals. It could be the same things in the report that are indeed driving the insights without you having to do raw analysis. And I think that's where the distinction is in like, I get it. I do raw data analysis all the time and there's aha moments, and very rarely am I in Power BI, right? I'll start with queries. I'll start in the source systems. It'll potentially go to Excel. And I absolutely get the, okay, I want to see this on an aggregated level. I'm going to use Power BI Desktop as a play around tool.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
I do love the point though there that is a huge use case of Power BI Desktop. And the fact that that's free is crazy amazing.
That's very true. Because yes.
Just from an analysis perspective, right? Download the power of that tool alone to be able to be like, you know what? I have these Excel files. I'd have to go either pay for Copilot or generate all these things on my own, or I can just bring them into Power BI. I can drop these fields in and then they automatically get aggregated for me. And I can group, I can slice and dice. I can do all this dynamic stuff in the tool to give me the insight I'm looking for. And that is really strong.
Well, let's go. Yeah. I want to go make a point here you made, Seth. I want to just emphasize one thing, Tommy, before we jump in there. Yeah. Seth, you said I could go to Excel or I could use a free tool. You have to pay for Excel. Excel just doesn't show up for free. Mm. And so this is one of the things I think that's very genius of Microsoft. They're giving away analysis services on your computer for free. They gave it away. They gave it to you in desktop. You get this really rich Power Query engine. You can have the VertiPack engine. You can build what you want in the report. Now, the genius I think here is, or the strategic part is, well, okay, great. You have the data. It's not valuable unless you can share it with somebody else. So like they're making the money on the service side of things. So we give away the software, but when you want to collaborate on it, that's the hook that gets you to buy the rest of the software pieces. So I just want to be very clear here. you can do so much with just Power BI Desktop. And that could be a heavy data analytics tool just in and of itself. If you're a team, a small business unit, if you can get your hands on that, that's incredibly powerful. Anyways, I just was very shook by your comment, Seth, and it resonated very well with me as far as the cost aspect ratio here.
Guys, I mean, this is all very much boding well to my argument on that conversation where not every visual is analytics. And that's what I was really, my point of view was, just because you have a report doesn't mean you're doing analytics, because we don't want to get in that. But I think this is a big point here. I think what Chris is at least alluding to, where someone's asked me to build a report. They are not asking me to spend time telling them what to do with the data, or can you dive into why the numbers are the way they are? They are asking me to build a report with not necessarily the expected number, but the expected metrics. If I add it in there, oh, by the way, here's your analyze by in the breakdown of the distribution. They're good. How many times you're, that's fine, but that's not necessary. And there's that big distinction between a report that is like on the observational side, but that's what people are really paying us to do. And unless it's explicitly part of the conversation with the business, was like, hey, go grab the data. We want to see X, Y, and Z. Also, can you help us understand why our sales are down over the last 6 months? Can you put something together in there? I love doing stuff like that, but that's what's changed to me with my role as a data analyst, where when we just had Excel, because I didn't have a lot of other time, there was no modeling. So it was like, where you're going to spend your time. It's like, hey, we just did this campaign. Can you kind of pull together what worked, what didn't? Now we're just saying, we're going to show you the trending. No one's asking me for my opinion on the data. Right. I'm not going to go back. And just so you guys know, you're spending a lot in this. They're going to go, great. We'll deal with us. You deal with you. And I think that's the kind of, that's a big part of this, and go ahead, try it. Break down your next report to them. And more often than not, that's just not the expectation of the visual side of Power BI. And yeah, it does have all those features, but we're also never tasked with that either, or more often than not when we're doing modeling.
I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and I think I agree with on the most part. But to say standard reports with common known OKRs or KPIs on them, to say that that's not analytics, I would disagree. I think it's a part of the analytics story, right?
Sure.
You're just describing more of a self-service method, right? So where I think I delineate my lines here a little bit more in this is, there's going to always have to be standard KPIs and known things. That's been developed and it's agreed upon by the organization that this is the way we do business. Those don't change. What I'm hearing in this comment here, and where I think where Chris is going here, is I do think so. I think there is a lot of discovery, self-exploration, figuring out what things are going to be working inside your data set. That's totally okay. And that's why Power BI exists. But this is why you develop cubes that you can then, or semantic models that you can go share, right? So that's why we design things the way we do. So the idea is the design of the data should support both types of metrics. It should support standard KPIs and standard analysis against designed goals. And it also should allow exploratory things. And where I want to kind of push on some topic here is, while Chris says, getting the analyst to dig through the data and go, aha, I found something. Those aha type reports typically don't last very long, I feel like. They are, you dig through the data, I'm looking for a question, I get down to, oh, I think this is the answer to that question. Yes. You think about articulating that story, and then the data changes. And then that story is no longer true. So the same group of visuals to do that analysis around here's a thing maybe don't pertain long term. Now, what may come out of that analysis is you may decide, hey, we need a couple more actual KPIs or things that help us decide what is good data or not good data, or what is good health of our business or not good health of our business. But I mean, I don't know if I agree with the fact that these self-discovery things will live on for a long period of time. I think these are things that you do for a period of time, they work, and then they eventually need to be deprecated.
Well, it's not, I think you're on a great point, and I want to agree with it and push it in a direction. And then I want to circle back to, okay, I think the core of what he's asking.
I'll allow
one. I totally agree with you. I think there's this premise or thing we're picking up here where, analysis always has to be in that exploratory stage, and mm-hmm. all of our things need to be there, and they don't. Correct. To your point, what is the outcome of a lot of that exploratory stuff? In your case, you just said one-off reports. Yep. Right.
Happens. Yep.
In
it's okay.
Quote, in quotes, the query, right? Yeah. You know, you have these, you have, yes, you, like somebody asks for something and then yep. they'll come back at random times every 4 or 6 months and say, mm-hmm. Hey, remember yeah. that report you ran for me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you do that again?
Yeah.
Cause there's no the same value, problem. Right?
Yeah.
But then, like, a lot of that exploration requires aggregation, right? And yep. then we need to aggregate it, output it, create an output where people need to see this aggregation. And that's where the value is, because we've already done the exploration. We want to now enhance and refine the outcome of that exploration, right?
Yes. Agreed.
And then we take it into advancing it. And that's where I think Power BI shines, from the standpoint that regardless of if you're wanting to look at the past, like, and this is where you pull out all the buzzwords of reporting: descriptive, diagnostic, predictive, prescriptive, right?
Yeah, and do the all the buzzwords.
More you go down this thing, all you were saying is there's a more refined approach to how the organization wants to utilize the data that you've found these things in, right? Because there's mm-hmm. a lot of value there, and there can be a lot of value in these discussions to not just look at what happened, but figure out what is making it happen. And that's what the fun, I think, of is a lot of in data analysis, like what's causing all this. But then ultimately a business wants to get into, can we predict what's going to happen, right?
Yeah,
maybe. Yep. And or eventually can we have the outputs of these data machines tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we land in this landscape, which we should, which is, not everything should be analysis, like straight up exploration. However, if we go back to the key part of his question, and I'm going to repeat it. My question is, how do we enable that kind, and by that kind, this exploration, I think, aha, kind of first time moment mm-hmm. experience for report users who are not going to design their own ad hoc report in desktop? I suspect this might involve perspectives and visual personalization. So like the idea is, Can we have that the model itself is creating value for the business. His expectation seems to be that these analysts aren't going to build their own desktop reports, but can we use Power BI as a tool to be that analysis tool, to be ad hoc and dynamic in a way that isn't the desktop, is kind of what I'm reading here.
Yes.
And maybe not. Right. Like it, if you're in my mind, there's been this theme over my career, right? Where people who don't understand, I shouldn't say that. There's this perspective that if you build a UI or a tool for business users to go mm-hmm. build their own reports, that they're going to do that and know how to do that. And they don't, and they won't, because it requires them to learn something. In a hardcore way. A very few will always learn the tool and always find the value, and you're not going to be able to spoon feed that, I guess, in report pages enough to cross a spectrum, in my mind, to do true data analysis of exploration insight on data sets, because you're going to already be utilizing tools like Excel or Power BI Desktop as you're doing that exploration, because you want to shift gears radically based on data sets. That's the basis of doing just raw analysis.
Yes.
And I don't think you can produce that output in Power BI. Do you guys? Or do you like, that's the way I read his description. Like, can we do that for the end user to go find their own insights, but still give them the the structure of like the tool sets to operate within there? Like, to me, this sounds like throw everything in the model and then have like all infinite choices of visualizations to slap data together.
No, I think, Mike, you said this in the beginning. I think there's a bit of training we do on the exploration side, and it's more than just like obviously the bookmarks and drill throughs. Like, I mean, there are a ton of features I think that we just don't utilize. I love the analyze by and just being able to
explain the increase, explain the decrease is another good one too.
Yeah, and the key influence. Yeah, so like just having that in. Being able to have the author do that, or the like the self-service side, not just the consumer, because then they can add that visual. I think the clustering, showing people the automated clusters, the key influencers, just those alone. Once you kind of showcase how they work, and I think that's a huge beginning starting point. The problem is. Unlike with something where I think your citizen developed data analyst 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. You had those Excel files. You're like, oh, I got that one result. I'm going to reference that one cell. And I kind of go step by step. The Power BI, the visual side it's not really meant to do that. Kind of like, almost, you know, doesn't behave like a Jupyter notebook. Like, oh, let me get that direct output. Of this one analysis, and now I want to dive in a little more. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, man, Tommy, you touched on a lot of points here that I was going to kind of reach out to talk about as well. Okay.
Go ahead.
I loved your comment there, Tommy. And I think we're in a stage right now where Power BI is directly... Let me say it this way. Prior to Fabric, you're right, Seth. I think a pure Power BI desktop could only do so much. And we had a little bit of extra tooling to help us out. And what I mean by that is we had paginated reports, we had Excel files, kind of going through this way. Where I think some of the real analysis starts coming through here is building a bunch of pivot tables on top of a cube. Mm-hmm. Very helpful. Getting into other statistics of things, right? Mm-hmm. Looking at different numbers. Now, so... If we extrapolate now and say, okay, Power BI is becoming the great analyst tool for everything that we need, to your point, Seth, like, yeah, we still have the cube still makes sense, but now I've got like a lake house. Now I've got Spark notebooks. And with Spark notebooks, I have everything that comes out of Python, statistics that go along with this. I can now use SQL wherever I want to go grab data and make new groups of tables. So I think... what we're getting now in the service with Fabric is we're now expanding the ability. We're expanding the ability for people to not just focus only on the Power BI report. Because to your point earlier, Tommy, I think you were saying this as well. The desktop is limited. It's you can do bookmarks. You can make a story with it. But that's kind of maybe after you've already thought about and kind of chewed through the data.
Right.
I really, really like this experience of having like a cube connected to a notebook and just digging through data. Like, I'm going to run a bunch of statistics on things, which I have a whole big table, which let's do a correlation matrix. Let's figure out which sensitivities of which variables align to other things. So we're getting to a point now where we actually have the tooling in front of us that is going to allow us to do more of these true data analyst type things, very technical pieces. And again, I think this is why I was kind of harping on earlier, the audience to me matters because the audience defines what... and how much of this information we're going to go after. Does that make sense? So I feel like we're
yeah, absolutely we're, it does.
Right now in this conversation and particularly with Fabric, Microsoft has made an inflection point for me. This is an inflection point where I'm looking back and going, wow, things were great before, but oh my goodness, if I look forward now into the future, the analyst or doing true data digging to find problems and answer questions can now be really developed at a much higher pace and with a much more rigor than we had previously. Whether that's now applying some data science to what you're doing, whether that's now applying just general statistical packages, whether that's now applying, I might just go through, Dan, one of my employees at our company, just found this really great Learn Python. It's a book, but the whole Learn Python thing is in Jupyter Notebooks. And it has, here's something we're going to learn in Python, and then here's the code. Run it right here. Test this out. Here's an example. Build your own thing right beneath it. So this idea or this concept of, you know, having a single report with just visuals bolted into it, why not do the exploratory data and tell the story in a notebook? I could have, you know, I can have words describing what's going on. Here's where I'm thinking about my analysis. Here's a graph or an image that Power BI's were producing inside the notebook. Here's a table of data that supports it. Here's some other, like, and boom, 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 boom. And now you can have a congruent analysis thought all inside the ecosystem.
Does the Fabric ecosystem in notebooks have a visualization feature baked in there?
Yes, it does.
I know Databricks does. Yeah. But like, I guess what I'm hearing you say is, for a lot of the data analytics or data analysis, a lot of this lives in a different tool. Well, as far as like a better solution,
I think my point is there's now a variety of tools that can now do this, right? So like, so it was just desktop and reports. Now we have other things that potentially also could help us out as well.
Well, and I think what's really cool about what you're talking about is this, the rallying around a delta table, right?
Yeah. Like,
or ultimately a model.
Oh, right? So big.
Because we've
huge moment.
The engineering to get a data set to the point where you have a model that previously, you try to cobble together a report page that is a mix of table and aggregation, but you might miss it. And how do you allow the flexibility of that within that framework? And it is harder. It's more difficult. You're not going to serve all the audiences. You're not going to get it all. And you're not going to have as wide a scope as you would have in tool sets that you're talking about.
Yep.
In a notebook, I can get into the data, into the model.
Yeah,
I can look at the data and then as I'm thinking about how I discover things or analyze, it always starts with the data. I see a pattern, something doesn't jive with business logic or my understanding of the business. And then I say, this is this thing. What is the scope of that? Like, how rampant is this issue in my data set? Boom, I go into aggregation, right? And a lot of that time is just summarizing, writing a query in a different way. But that's where these tools now having the built-in visualization aspects to aggregate the data or show it in that way, in a visual way, is very easy for me to digest and see what type of problem I have in a visual sense, not just the table sense. So like, to me, that is a fantastic method to do that type of analysis, as opposed to creating that in a tool that isn't as versatile as that Fabric ecosystem, right? As you're outlining, or different tooling allows us to do.
Guys.
Can I add one point to Seth's point here? There was a moment in time when I was using Power BI Desktop where I realized Power BI Desktop is just SQL. And I was like, what? And what happened for me was I was slicing and dicing data by dragging visual, like columns of data to visuals, and or maybe I was making big wide tables inside Power BI on pages, and I could literally drag and drop data fields over to the filters. And I had this epiphany, and I was trying to explain this to users. I'm like, why do we want to do this? I kept saying, well, it's like you're writing the SQL, but you don't have to do the SQL writing. So I remember some times where I was doing some SQL analysis and I just got tired of writing select these columns from the table, do the join on. I was like, it's faster for me to whip through and just drag stuff on the page, make a really large, like take your Power BI report page, double the size so you have plenty of space to put lots of little tables on it, throw all these tables on the page and just go to town. Okay, what's this column do? Okay, put it here. Great. Here's the sum of that. Boom, just drop it there. Done. Okay, great. Now I'm going to have these other dimensions, six dimensions on the page. Great. Click each one. Bing, 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 bing. Stuff starts changing in real time. Like that was like incredible for me. I was like, oh my gosh, I've just written like 70 SQL statements to dig into the data to figure out what's going on. But to your point, Seth, it's not a pretty report. It didn't have bookmarks. It wasn't all the fancy bells and whistles. It was literally just a shape of data where I joined these tables via relationships. And then I wrote a whole bunch of, you know, not wrote, but I mean, I used the UI to basically do a bunch of SQL conditions to figure out what the data is doing.
Yeah. I think ultimately where I land is I personally wouldn't try to create that experience in a shared method. I would invest the time in training people on how to use rudimentary Correct. Basics of Power BI Desktop to get the most value out of it. Because if we're going to create that same experience as a notebook and visualizations and tables and whatnot, you can do that if you're the author.
Correct.
Because you have the full control of what you want on the canvas, and ultimately the insights that you're going to pull out of there, if they know how to create a more formalized thing to share with other people, you're magnifying the impact that they can make in the organization.
I apologize, Tommy. I've been interrupting a lot. Tommy, say something.
I feel like you're getting ready to blow up. I'm glad you guys are so excited about notebooks. Are we forgetting that, like, we're literally trying to get the business users to try to start using Power BI for data analysis, and then we're throwing Jupyter notebooks? I'm sorry. I think you have just completely split up the audience here of the business user who has problems in Excel. And we're trying to give
Have you seen the financial reports that are built in Excel from the finance team?
Yeah, and they're very cool. Now to learn Python.
It's a leap.
Not all data analysts will be equals. I think you're right, Tommy. Like, you're not gonna be able to walk into this and be like, okay, here's a notebook. Everyone have at it and be fun. Like, do fun things. I agree with you 100% there. But what I would agree with, though, is I would also say, like, yes, but there's a wide variety of experiences of people. There's going to be a lot of people that do different things.
You're right, but that doesn't mean Jupyter Notebooks, which is a very subset of a product language and tooling.
Okay. It's just part of the product. Just one aspect.
Yeah, I think you have a very granular view because someone has to know Python, where with Power BI, if you can drag and drop, you can
already have a model. Why do you need to know Python to use a Jupyter notebook? You can use SQL.
You can use SQL too.
Great. Everyone. So whatever language they're going to use, it's a completely different way of doing it. It's meant for data engineers and data scientists. It's not meant for the layperson. It's not.
I disagree with that statement because I think we're starting from a world of BI and business individuals. This is just, yes. So this is where I think Microsoft has not done us justice in the fabrication of the different personas that are going to use this Microsoft Power BI thing. Like, I think, to your point, Tommy, a lot of people are going to come into the Power BI ecosystem. They're going to come in with the mindset of data flows, data models or data sets, and reports. That's what we're going to start with. All I'm trying to say is, if you're doing analyst stuff, if you have a true analyst going in and digging through the data, eventually, or the variety of tooling that they're going to be given is now way more capable. And so, yes, I agree with you. You're going to talk about the data engineer or the data scientist using notebooks. But I love that, even as a pretty technical person, I love the experience of it. And I think
I do too.
It's democratization of these other tools. There was a much larger barrier to entry to get into those tooling because you had to go turn on Synapse or turn on a Spark cluster and configure things in Azure. Like, all that's now gone. And so what we've done is we've brought the barrier to entry to all these other great tools lower for anyone.
But I agree with Tommy. Just because they're there doesn't mean people are using them. And you know this better than anybody else because Power Query has been part of Excel and part of our big pitch throughout.
People don't even know that exists. Yeah.
Right. With Power BI is, hey, guys, you know this has been there for like 5 years.
Yeah.
But so it is going to be a small subset of very technical or people who want to learn stuff, analysts that are going to be pushing back into notebooks. Tommy, like, do you agree with, like, how would we produce that for the lay analyst then? Is it training them into Power BI Desktop? Or do you think you can do this in a more formalized report that allows them the exploration they need?
I think there's a lot of opportunity with Power BI Desktop because I don't think half the people who are, especially the audience of the self-service side, they're not modeling data, even know about some of those AI, not Copilot, features with key influencers, with the clustering, with binning, with the what-if analysis. Like, and some of those you do need to, like, build in the model, but a lot of it you don't. it's like just diving into like what did cause X, Y, and Z, that again, that predictive, or not predictive, but that more descriptive. Again, there's some limitations there that I mentioned, but I would highly encourage, like, yeah, look at all these features from all the insights to the Q&A, which has gotten a lot better. Compared to telling someone, hey, you, we're going to use a notebook. Here's the thing, you know, SQL. Oh, now you're going to have to connect to, probably not, we're not going to make them connect to a database at that point, because then that's getting out of the workflow of our semantic model.
Well, I think, I think our workload is changing slightly. I think we would then, you know, I would think we focus on the lakehouse, or the lakehouse becomes the landing part, the landing location for all of our data, right? So we no longer want to burden reporting systems, enterprise reporting systems. We'd land all the data into our lakehouse, and from the lakehouse, then we handle and distribute the data from there. Oh my gosh, Tommy, look at the time. We are, like, to go back to our early conversation, we are old. I was just getting started on this whole thing, and this is a great question, and oh my gosh, we're already at an hour already. So I apologize. I totally lost track of time. I got way into this conversation, and really think this is a great way to figure out how we can, what we can push on the different, again, I think this is a, I think this is a great point, Tommy, you're making here as well. All right, I apologize. Very random thoughts. Let's do final thoughts here, and then we'll wrap it for today, because this was a great question. This was a great follow-up to what is an analyst? How do we do it? And hopefully we didn't dance around it too much. And hopefully we were able to bring out some other topical pieces around what does the data analyst look like, and how does that impact what we do inside PowerBay.com? So Tommy, final, give us some final thoughts.
I feel pretty good with what I said. That's like, I just made it the shot, so I'm good.
Tommy threw some shots. Seth.
Yeah. I think, so one, it is a great question. Two, it throws out, yes, one of the most challenging things to produce in a reporting is a report that would allow the versatility that an analyst would need or want to do across data sets. And that's why I think I would land more in training them how to use Power BI Desktop as itself, like unblock and unlock those features and functionality to them, so that they can be a problem solver instead of creating more problems for you in the fact that you would have to like reshape and give them another page or another view of the data. And I think that's the first step in getting them to the data access that they need for those kind of aha insights or deep exploration. And then to Mike's point, you know, Fabric is a fantastic ecosystem that, as I think organizations adopt it, there are a lot more paths for graduating people up into earlier and earlier aspects of data and or deeper insights that they can generate on their own using coding languages and things like that. So the door being open is fantastic, or at least there. But I would lean more into training them and getting them to use Power BI Desktop as the analysis tool.
I like that as well, Seth. I think that's a really good point. I think my final thoughts here are, people are going to be comfortable doing what they want to do, right? So if you're an Excel user and you love Excel, you know, analyzing Excel is probably going to be your friend. If you are comfortable in desktop and shaping data and moving data around, you're probably going to like playing around in desktop a lot longer. It doesn't mean there's not a variety of tools you can use at your disposal. But to go back to the question from Chris directly here is, I think there is a place for analytics or analysts where you find those aha pieces of data. It will need to happen. You're going to need people just to kind of continue to wash through that data and figure out what makes sense. I think what comes out of this aha moment potentially will turn into new KPIs or new things we need to measure as a business that would then turn into more of a formalized goal and or OKR type report. But I think I don't want to limit the scope of what an analyst can do and say we can only do OKRs, we can only do goals. I think this is all part of the process. I think this is all analytics or analysis, data analysis that has to happen. Yep. People have to get in, they have to see the data, they have to push it around until they find what they're looking for. And then from there, you decide what you do next. So I like this. This is great. I think this is a really good about storytelling with data. And I love the fact that we're in a very exciting space right now. Very thrilled to be continually working on Power BI and Fabric. Super fun. Anyways, Thank you so much for listening to us for over an hour now. We appreciate your ears and listening to us. We thank you so much for your time. We know your time is valuable. We would really ask if you would help us out. If you could help us out by sharing this episode with somebody else, letting them know that they this would be an interesting episode to potentially talk through and think through what is an analysis and what should we be thinking about as a company. Maybe we spend more time in desktop helping people actually go through the exercise of finding the insights and the data with desktop. It would be very, very interesting. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
Man, you can continue to find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode? Which you guys have obviously done. Thank you guys for all the topics lately. Head over to PowerBI Tips/podcast. Leave your name and a great question. And finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central. And join the conversation on all Power BI Tips social media channels.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.